Are we good to go, Mr. Chair?
Let's roll.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jake McKenzie. I'm the Vice Chair of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. This has come as somewhat of a surprise to the McKenzie clan that I would become such a thing. But anyway, here I am, and in honor of Randy Rentschler, I'm wearing long trousers today, which shocked Assemblymember Dodd to the core and Assemblymember Mullen. But never mind. I'd just like to welcome you all in this select committee to improving Bay Area transportation systems, and like to welcome you to the Metro Center in this auditorium. And I've told you what my name is. I'm a Roanoke Park City Council member, and I'm the vice chair of this commission, and I represent the county and the cities of Sonoma, which I have done for the past 7 years. My carefully prepared remarks have certain funny asides that I am going to deliver to you. Or anyway, maybe they're funny, maybe they're not. We're not normally here in August. And so this is kind of a little bit of breaking ground for us to be having such a formal meeting here in the month of August. But nonetheless, I think it's clearly in this state of California, in this Bay Area, a subject of critical importance. Now, can we break new ground, I think, is the question that's before all of us at this time. We have a long list of important accomplishments here at MTC, working cooperatively with the state, with the federal government, to try to bring functioning transportation systems to the Bay Area. But this meeting was carefully scheduled for 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I was wondering about this, and I thought it was probably to expose everybody to the joys of the reverse commute in the Bay Area on a Friday afternoon. It may be Friday light getting to this meeting, as it was this morning, but it sure as hell ain't going to be Friday light going back home for all of us, and it just points out, I think, the challenges that we face. These remarks, by the way, were ad-libbed. We've emerged over the past 4 years as the main economic engine of California's recovery from the Great Recession. Don't pay any attention to what the stock market's doing, guys. Everything is going to be fine. We are going to continue to function well as a state. But this transportation engine is not functioning as well as it should be. The pains are felt throughout the system, whether you're a BART rider, whether you're a commuter, whether you are a tourist. Personal experience last weekend, I had my great nephew visiting from Finland. I picked him up at the airport, and I thought, what a grand idea. We'll show them the Golden Gate Bridge, and we'll go to Vista Point. And you start to realize some of the changes that are happening that are impacting our transportation system. Bicycle renters on the Golden Gate Bridge and in Sausalito, tour buses at Vista Circle are causing backups onto the Golden Gate Bridge at midday on a Thursday. And they're having problems on the weekend. So it's not just the economic engine of people going to jobs. It's an influx of tourists as well that are having unprecedented and unthought-of impacts on our system. Now, it says here, hand off to committee chair Jim Frazier. So the aging pains and the growing pains are equally serious. They will merit serious discussion. We have, at my right-hand side, professionals, serious transportation policy professionals, it says in my notes. So you guys be serious this afternoon. And then join me, and all of you can join me as well, behind me in welcoming Jim Frazier, whose 11th Assembly District includes much of Solano County and Eastern Costa County, and is the chair of this committee, and all your fellow Assembly members. Welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. McKenzie, so what I'd like to do before I start with my opening comments, I'd like to start from my left to right with my colleagues introducing themselves, where they're from, and Mr. Bonta.
Thank you, Chairman Frazier. I'm Rob Bonta, honored to be the Assembly Member for the 18th Assembly District, which includes our very location as we speak, Oakland, Alameda, and San Leandro. It's an honor to be here, and I want to thank Chairman Frazier for all of his tremendous leadership on improving transportation infrastructure in the state of California.
I'm David Chu, representing Eastern San Francisco, and I want to thank the community of transportation and transit experts that we have here who will hopefully help us tackle, I think, one of the biggest crises that are facing the Bay Area right now.
I'm Assemblywoman Catherine Baker from the 16th Assembly District. That includes Alameda County, Dublin, Pleasanton, Livermore, and Contra Costa County, La Mirinda area, Walnut Creek, Danville, 5 BART stations, 3 major freeways, 2 big interchanges, and most of the Port of Oakland traffic. So I thank the chairman for organizing this committee and including me as well as a guest and for bringing this together. Thank you.
Bill Quirk, 20th Assembly District, so that's almost all the unincorporated areas, Hayward, Union City, and the northern part of Fremont. Honorable Jim Frazier has been our transportation chair, has been around the state. He's working very hard getting this all together, talking about what our needs are, and I really appreciate what he's doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Evan Lowe, representing San Jose, Silicon Valley. And let me just say that we are in a unique position, particularly in the legislature as it relates to the Bay Area, as it relates to transportation, just given that our chair will have potentially up to 12 years in this position. And so when we talk about the things that we're doing today, it will have an impact in the future, 5 years, 10 years, in which, in all likelihood, many of us will still be here to help oversee in terms of oversight and holding not only ourselves accountable, but state agencies accountable as well. And I just wanted to encourage us to think about the importance of who we represent as an electorate. Are we serving the people appropriately as it relates to transportation? Have we lived up to their expectations? Or as it relates to the service and the jobs that we do as a legislature and as transportation agencies, have we been a failure? And these are important things to think about as it relates to not only those that are in the industry, and we're not talking about just the audience here in this room, but the people outside who are too busy with their daily lives and their schedules to not be here because they're trying to put food on the table. And so I encourage this dialogue, and thank you very much for having me here.
Hello, my name is Bill Dodd. I represent the 4th Assembly District, which includes Napa, Lake, and Yolo, and parts of Solano, Sonoma, and Sonoma counties. Spent a lot of time in this room as a commissioner for 14 years. It's great to be back here. I'm appreciative of the chair of the Transportation Commission, Chair Frazier, for including me on the select committee for the Bay Area. We've got lots of work to do, and let's roll up our sleeves and get it going. Thank you.
Kevin Mullen, 22nd Assembly District, San Mateo County, from Genentech in the north to Oracle in the south. I like to tell folks, South City to Redwood City and then over to the coast. Speaker Pro Tem of the Assembly, honored to be on the Select Committee. Want to thank the chair for his outstanding leadership. And like Mr. Dodd, spent quality time in this room as a member of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. So it's good to be home and looking forward to a productive day.
Thank you, members, for taking time out of your busy schedule today on this such very important transportation issues. My name is Jim Frazier. I'm the chair of the, obviously, of the Transportation Committee, also the chair of the special session Transportation Infrastructure Committee in the Capitol. What I'd like to do is kind of share with you that transportation is my passion. This is what I've come to the Assembly to do and sought the transportation chair so that we could actually have an opportunity, as mentioned, 10 years at the possibility of being the chair so that we can have institutional knowledge going forward, working with the stakeholders, moving forward on a better highway system, better transportation system, better transit system. But I want to share with you the purpose of our select committee. And the purposes of this hearing will be to identify challenges facing the greater Bay Area transportation system, as well as highlighting system achievements. The Select Committee will not only hear from stakeholders to isolate deficiencies and possible solutions to the system as a whole, but also identify successes and how to expand on those accomplishments to improve quality of life for Bay Area residents and commuters. And this is why transportation is very important to this region and us. Safe roads and bridges, interregional connectivity, robust trade corridors, and obviously economic development and business improvement, and quality of life for our commuters and our residents, as Assemblymember Lowe had just talked about. Are we representing them well? A combination of sources are going to be needed to accomplish this. Toll roads, dedicated trade routes, transit, open highways and safe roads of our highways. And 8 of the 9 Bay Area counties are so-called self-help counties. What can we learn, improve, or replicate on these processes of these people who tax themselves to be part of a solution going forward? The voters passed RM2 in 2004. What could we tout as successes, and how could we do that better also? And what reforms have been suggested to improve transit services in the Bay Area? We also have goods movement and at our ports. Are goods flowing in and out at an optimum level? Because what we have now is introducing the movements of goods and services into congestion. What can we learn? And what can we improve? And what roadblocks are there that we need as legislators to improve or legislate a solution? So we are here to identify solutions to improving our Bay Area transportation system. And I look forward to this select committee effecting positive change for all of us in the Bay Area. We will leave this hearing with action items to improve the system. So I'm looking forward to a good dialogue, and we have some experts today in front of us working for different agencies, and I would like to start out now with our stakeholders and start with Steve Heminger, Executive Director of our Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and thank you and your staff for setting this up today and hosting us.
Mr. Chairman, it was our pleasure. I'm Steve Heminger, Executive Director of the Commission here. It's a pleasure to appear before you for the second time this week. Mr. Chairman, you're wearing many hats these days. And also to appear before two former commissioners who were a little bit too sarcastic about how much they enjoyed their time working here, I thought. But I'll let that go right on by. The Bay Area, as all of you know, and it's a pleasure especially to see so many of you here, I'm tempted to ask for a motion on raising some kind of fee or tax, and we can take care of the other subject while we're here. But maybe that would be premature. The Bay Area, as I think you all know, because you come from so many points of the compass, is a very big and dynamic and complicated place. So I had a little bit of trouble trying to narrow down what I would talk to you about today. So I prepared a fairly broad-ranging presentation. I'm going to spin through it pretty quickly and try to save as much time for not only my colleagues on the panel, but for your questions as well, because I suspect you might have one or two. And I did want, as you said, Mr. Chairman, to both look backward a little bit in terms of what we'd accomplished as well as what we still have to do, because the job's never done when it comes to transportation. That is one sure thing. And I think it is worth noting that we have lived through, all of us, probably the biggest construction boom in our Bay Area transportation infrastructure since the Great Depression, when the big Transbay bridges were built, when the Caldecott was built, when all kinds of investment was being made at a very difficult economic time. And just some of the pictures on the screen, we've built three new interstate bridges in the Bay Area in the last few years. We've opened two new tunnels in San Mateo, in Contra Costa County. We've opened a rail connection to the airport here in Oakland to match the one we have in San Francisco. We also have some major work still underway. That big hole in the ground in San Francisco is turning into a Transbay terminal. The middle pictures on the page, I believe, are the Warm Springs extension, which will get BART to the cusp of Santa Clara County, and we've got another project right behind it that will get BART all the way into the heart of Silicon Valley and the largest city in our region. And on the right, now opened, is the new southern connection to the Golden Gate Bridge, the Doyle Drive. And Mr. Dodd had a little bit to do with that when he was the chairman of this commission way back when. So the question, I guess, is what do we do for an encore? And we've certainly got a lot of things to deal with. And I think our vice chair, Jake McKenzie, mentioned the fact that the Bay Area has both aging pains and growing pains to deal with. We have some of the oldest infrastructure in California just because we've been around longer than especially those new kids down to the south. Our transit system, we got started on transit a lot sooner than the rest of California did. The Muni is over 100 years old in San Francisco, and believe me, in some parts of it, it looks like it. So we've got aging pains, but we are also a very dynamic and growing region, and I believe generating a very large fraction of the state's income and other tax revenue these days because of the economic dynamism of our region. But that is putting tremendous stress on our transportation assets as well. So we've got to deal with both aging and growing pains at the same time. And the governor, I use the phrase, eat your peas. I think that's sort of his message, that we've got to take care of the infrastructure that we've built. And I know that's the lion's share of your work in the special session. And we are certainly four square behind those efforts. If you don't take care of your existing assets, you do it at your peril, and you will pay for it one way or the other. You might think you're avoiding some kind of tax or fee bill by not paying for infrastructure, but you're just handing it off to individual motorists who are paying those costs every day they drive their car and bottom out in the latest pothole, or in the case of the chairman, I believe, lose a windshield to a passing truck. So we've all got that kind of experience. And here in the Bay Area, as I mentioned to the special session committee that I testified before on Wednesday, we're really putting our money where our mouth is when it comes to what we call fixing it first. This is a pie chart showing all the money that we're going to be spending going forward over the next 25 years. It's close to $300 billion. And you can see when you add the two big pie pieces together, which are maintaining our transit and road system, we're spending close to 90% of all the money we think we're going to find just taking care of our existing assets. Now, you might say maybe we deserve a pat on the back for being so responsible, and maybe we do. But what that leaves, you can do the simple math, is just a little over 10% to deal with the growth that this region has coming. And that's the real squeeze that we are under. And it's not unique to the Bay Area. That's true in L.A. It's true in San Diego. It's true across the country, that our infrastructure budgets are being squeezed by these huge, unfunded, and delayed and deferred maintenance bills. And we've got to pay those bills, but we cannot do it at the complete expense of expanding our transportation infrastructure, or we're going to kill ourselves one way instead of the other. In the Bay Area, we've got two big components of a deficit, even after spending 90% of our money on maintenance and operation of the existing system. We've got $20 billion shortfalls for potholes in local roads, and you can see the orange is the shortfall, and every county's got one. So you can, your district has a pothole shortfall, no matter which district you are. And on that question, I know you all are wrestling with the issue of how to pay for not only local road repair but state highway repair, and no one likes taxes and fees. I was interested, though, in the field poll in February. And I know elected officials from time to time look at polling information, that you look across the board, look to the total of the answer to the question, how about a 10-cent increase in the gas tax to improve roads and highways? The answer is about split, 50-50. Look in the Bay Area, though. It's over two-thirds say yes. And that's something that I think we are very fortunate as a region to have taxpayers who are willing to put their money where their mouth is, and who bellyache about transportation, but who are also willing to dig into their own pocket and pay for it. And I think that's a very encouraging sign in our region, especially, as you know, since we raise so much of the money that we invest in our system right here in the Bay Area and not in Sacramento and Washington. Now, we'd certainly like you to raise a little bit more in Sacramento, and I'll leave that to another day. We've also, though, in the Bay Area, especially given our multimodal approach to transportation, we've got to take care of our transit assets as well. And unfortunately, I'm afraid I've got the same number for them, another $20 billion shortfall, even after spending 90% of our money, including a lot of highway money that we're shifting from roads to transit to take care of transit. We still have big shortfalls remaining. The two largest systems at the bottom, BART and Muni in San Francisco, you would probably think obviously have the biggest shortfalls, and they do. But Caltrain's is quite large compared to its total budget, as is AC Transit's here in the East Bay. So it really is a regional problem that we have to deal with. And it's not good enough just to have the roads working. We need the roads and transit working in combination. One thing we're doing about that transit problem is we've adopted a core capacity program, which is nearly an $8 billion challenge grant program, where we are essentially challenging the folks in San Francisco, we're challenging BART, we're challenging AC Transit. If you can come up with some money with your own local funds, going to your voters, going to the ballot, we will match dollar for dollar everything you raise up to $8 billion. And that's a very significant commitment that we're making. Again, a lot of it is cross-subsidized, coming from motorists, going to transit. But in our region, we really do think we need as many arrows in the quiver as possible to get people around here, which means we need to maintain a variety of modes at their ultimate effectiveness. Let's turn then to the growing pains, and they are substantial. They may not be as big as the pains that the Central Valley is facing, because the Valley is really seeing greater levels of growth than some of the more established metropolitan areas along the coast. But for the Bay Area, 1 million more jobs and 2 million more people is plenty of growth to deal with, especially when you look at some of our corridors and how saturated they are today. That is the challenge before us. This is from our current transportation plan. I wouldn't be surprised if our next one probably jacks these numbers up a little bit, because we're already meeting some of our 30-year job totals in year five, given the explosive growth, especially in San Francisco and on the peninsula. The Bay Area, as you know, historically ranks very high around the country in traffic congestion. We're still number three, so that's either good or bad news, depending upon your point of view. I do remember Dean Lesher, who used to be the publisher of the East Bay, a bunch of East Bay newspapers. He used to tell the story that when he was stuck in traffic, he would get out of his car and lean down and kiss the pavement and just say, thank God for a strong economy. But that is the case. What happens when you have a strong economy is you've got a lot of travel, and you've got it concentrated in the peak hours, and you've got to deal with it. A little more fine-grained on that in the Bay Area, these are the top 10 most congested locations. And the nice thing about this map, I think, is it really makes clear to you that we've got three major job centers in the Bay Area. One of them is San Francisco. To its south is Silicon Valley, and to its east is the Tri-Valley, and that's where those arrows are all coming and going from at different times of day. So we have this multipolar region, and so in that way we have an even more complicated challenge than a place like L.A. or Chicago, where you've got one big center city, and it's pretty much everyone going to that place and coming back from it at night. We've got a very different commute landscape and a much more challenging one in a lot of ways. If you want a little bit of a ray of sunshine, here's one. Even though we're the third most congested place in the United States, of those top 10 metropolitan areas that we're comparing to here, we have the most reliable travel time. So we are reliably congested, Mr. Chairman, and maybe you could take that home and see if that smokes out of the peace pipe. I'm not sure it does. Although for businesses, I think reliability does matter. I don't think anyone's out there expecting us to make congestion go away. But I think what's killing us is when the same trip takes 10 minutes and then takes 40 minutes the next day. It's hard to plan your inventory when you've got that kind of variability. So I make light of it, but this actually is a little bit of a glimmer of hope. Now, let me start with some solutions here. And here we need your help, not only with funding, but with authority in some cases, because we need to try some new things. And I'm the transportation guy, and I'm going to lead off my solutions with housing. Because a big part of our solution, we believe, in the Bay Area is to get the houses and the jobs in the right places, to make sure that growth happens in a sustainable way, so that the growth occurs where the transit investment is occurring, so that more and more of those folks can use public transit. The U.S. Census just released some information a couple of days ago that of the 10 largest metropolitan areas in the country, the San Francisco metropolitan area had the single largest drop in the number of people driving alone to work versus taking other modes. And when you think about it, it's not that surprising. We've had phenomenal job growth, and a lot of it has happened in San Francisco and its environs. And are you going to drive your car to San Francisco if you could at all avoid it? So we've got the jobs going in some place where we've got a very robust transit infrastructure. Now, we need to improve and expand that infrastructure, but we've got the match made right. And we think we need to do the same thing with housing, so that fewer people have to make long commutes. If you look on this map and you look at the blue, which are things we call priority development areas, the place that we want, especially residential development, to occur, it's probably easy for you to pick out the existing transit lines. Look at the peninsula. It's easier for you to identify where are we making big transit investments right now, like the Central Subway in San Francisco, the BART extension in Silicon Valley. Even in the North Bay, you can see pieces of the smart railroad that's being constructed up there. I think we really are finally in our region better matching up our housing and transportation investment. And we now have a plan, thanks to you and Senate Bill 375, that requires us to do so, that we update every 4 years. We are also betting on transit, and I say this unapologetically. I think our region has always bet on transit to some extent, but I think it's even more important now because we don't want to be just sprawling out into open space. We want to grow more up than out, and that means that we're going to need more transit capacity and service to serve that kind of development. This is the same $300 billion I showed you earlier, but just by mode. And you can see we're spending two-thirds of it on public transit. And to be candid, transit doesn't carry two-thirds of the people right now. So this is a big vote of confidence that we can do better in terms of how we deliver transit performance in our region. And in fact, I've got some good news to share with you here, too. All the squiggly lines here are various major transit operations in our region. And you can see the two big outstanding performers since the early 90s are BART and Caltrain. In BART's case, it's more or less been, I think, sort of organic growth. We've opened some extensions, but I think for the most part, this is folks moving to where the BART stations and system is. But with Caltrain, they made actually an explicit decision about how to run their service, and they started these things called baby bullet trains, which skip a lot of stops and get people from San Jose to San Francisco in under an hour. And guess what? they gained more ridership than they lost, a lot more, even though in some cases they were providing less service to certain stations. So the good news is we know how to grow transit ridership. The bad news is that when you compare us to other places around the country again, and we think this is a healthy exercise, we're not doing so good. And you can see that other areas, even Los Angeles, which is just, it makes me choke to say this, even Los Angeles is doing better at growing ridership. Now, you might say they're building a big system, and so they're probably growing faster, and I think there's some truth to that. But the Bay Area ought to be much closer to the top of this pack than the middle of this pack. And we do think that one of the reasons for this is that we need to get a better handle on the productivity of all of our transportation investments, but especially in public transit. And what this chart shows you, and this is over a period of time that we recently undertook a very intensive course of study of how exactly our transit systems are paid for, as well as how much they cost by line item, by activity, by function. And what we find is, on the left, that after you adjust for inflation, over this 10-year period, costs have gone up by 30%. The yellow bar, though, is how many more revenue vehicle hours, how much more service did we get out of that 30% increase, and it falls by half to 15%. And then you go to the red box, which is, well, with 15% more service, how many more riders did we get? And it falls off again by 50%. We've got to turn this thing around. We cannot be seeing these kinds of returns on the very substantial investment we're making. And as a result, the commission not too long ago, I think a couple of these members may have been on the board still when we did this, decided to establish some new performance targets so that each agency, each of the big agencies, would be responsible for reducing their cost per service hour by a certain percent by 2017. That's not a forever target. That's coming up pretty soon. And we worked with each agency to set these targets at places that we thought were achievable. This obviously involves issues related to labor and work rules, so it's going to involve contract discussions as well, which is not typically a place that MTC gets involved, but we thought it was important enough in this case to try to put some performance benchmarks out there so that, given the investment we're going to make in public transit and the one we've already made, that we will get more out of that than we put into it. And I'm remembering now, I believe Mr. Dodd was actually the chairman of that effort, so he might want to speak to more about that as we go on. Obviously, the biggest transit investment we're making in California is high-speed rail, and it's going to be a big deal here in the Bay Area when it connects up, and the biggest impact is going to be on the peninsula, where it will share right-of-way with the Caltrain system. And one of the co-benefits that we're trying to put in place now is electrifying that line, not only for Caltrain, but for high-speed rail in the future. And we will have, frankly, not one, but two Grand Central Terminals on that system, one in San Francisco at Transbay and the other at the Diridon station in San Jose. And so that will be a pretty significant development, not only for our region, but for that part of our region as well. Transit's not the only answer. Let me repeat that. Transit's not the only answer. And I think one of the mistakes we make, even though we are betting on transit, and even though we talk a lot about transit, is we got to remember that it works well in certain places and it's really pressured to compete in others. And on this chart, we selected some some municipalities around the Bay Area. And the transit bar, this is the share of commute mode, is the dark green. And you can see in San Francisco, it's very healthy, and that's what you would expect. By contrast, look at San Jose. We've got to do better than that in San Jose, and I think getting BART down there is going to be a big part of that answer. We're doing pretty well in Oakland, but we also can do better. The question is, in Santa Clara, in Palo Alto, in some of those kinds of locations, is transit going to capture 40% of the commute trips? It's not. We need different kinds of solutions. And when I said earlier that the Bay Area is a very diverse place, this is what I meant. And so one way to do that is with express lanes. And I think many of you are familiar with these. We've got one in operation in Alameda County, another one in San Jose. Another one coming in Alameda on 580 in just a couple of months, I think. And what these lanes do is essentially convert carpool lanes as well as construct them, and then allow carpools to use them for free, just like buses. But folks who aren't carpools can pay to use the lanes. Some people call them Lexus lanes, but they really aren't, because where they're in use around the country, there are people of all income levels using them. I tend to refer to them as type A lanes. They're people who absolutely positively got to get somewhere. And I'm sure each of you knows a lot of those people in the Bay Area. And my view is, if people are willing to give you money to get a faster trip, you ought to figure out a way to take it. And so the express lane system that MTC will help build will be in Alameda, Contra Costa, and Solano counties. The VTA in Santa Clara is building its system down there for the customer. They'll look the same. But the basic idea here, and I know you're talking in the special session about both revenue and reform. Here, the revenue is the reform, because instead of taxing people to build roads, you're basically taking voluntary contributions to do it. And that's certainly got to make folks a little bit more popular than asking for a tax bill. And so we think this for our region, given how many carpool lanes we have, how much traffic congestion we have, and the level of affluence, frankly, in a lot of these corridors where people would be willing to make these payments, this one's a no-brainer. We also have to keep in mind that those congestion figures I showed you earlier, only about half of that congestion is pure engineering bottlenecks, right? Just too many folks trying to get through too small a space. The other half are the incidents, the truck breaking down, the work zones, weather, you name it. And all of that stuff, you know, it's not like building more road is going to help it. You basically need a different set of strategies to deal with those sorts of incident-related delay. And the good news is they don't cost a lot of money. The bad news is we haven't put enough emphasis on them because we spend so much time talking about the bottlenecks. And the fact is we're only dealing with half the problem when we do that. And so we have been launching with our partners at Caltrans and the local congestion management agencies a whole series of initiatives to try to deal with that variable congestion that we have every day. And this ranges from ramp metering to warning people that a queue is coming, running on the shoulders of some of our freeways. We've got a project right now that we're trying to get the shoulder on the Richmond Bridge restored to vehicle use like it used to be when the bridge was built. So all sorts of things, lots of technology, both high and low tech, again, at fairly modest cost, can really bring dramatic benefits to our region's road system. Another thing we do, as you all know, as the chairman indicated, 8 of our 9 counties are self-help. And the red bars show you what those measures raise, or at least what they did raise in fiscal year 2012. The blue bar showed you what the State Transportation Improvement Program was in 2012. And I hate to say that if I had to update this chart to today, the blue bars would disappear. There's no STIP. Because of the gas tax swap and the way it's been implemented by the Board of Equalization. And so basically we're the only game in town, these local measures, in terms of improving our transportation networks. So we certainly hope that's something that you address in your special session before you finish. And let me finish by talking a little bit about something the chairman mentioned. And that is another way we do self-help in the Bay Area is with our toll bridges. And I think most of you are aware that MTC also serves as the Bay Area Toll Authority. The legislature gave us the job of collecting all the toll revenue, which we do. They also gave us the job of borrowing against that revenue stream to deliver over $12 billion worth of improvements over the last few years, and we've done that. And we're now in debt for about $8 billion. The good news is it's a little over 4% debt. So we picked a pretty good time to borrow a lot of money. And what we have done with that money is fund 3 major activities. The first was the seismic retrofit and replacement of those bridges. The second and third are 2 regional plebiscites that passed by the voters of the Bay Area, one in the late 80s. And the other one about 10 years ago, Regional Measure 1 and Regional Measure 2, they were both put on the ballot in 7 counties instead of all 9. And if we do this again, we would recommend we get everybody in the tent. And you can see the measures passed both of them pretty handily. The good news here is that even though Regional Measure 1 passed by 70%, it didn't have to. These are fees and only require a majority vote for approval, not 2/3, which is what the local sales taxes require. So just as a pure matter of politics, that's something worth considering when we think about whether Regional Measure 3 might be in our future. And in terms of what we've delivered, the returns, I think, have been very substantial. I mentioned earlier three new interstate bridges, which is the biggest spurt of construction this region has seen in 70 years. Some major transit investments, the Transbay Terminal in San Francisco, $400 million worth of bridge tolls. The Warm Springs extension of BART, over $300 million worth of bridge tolls. The bridges, because we can combine the revenue into a single revenue stream and pledge all those assets against it, is a really powerful financing mechanism. So I'll leave you with the thought of whether anyone is ready for Regional Measure 3. That would require a bill by your legislature to authorize such a measure to be placed on the ballot before the voters at some future election. But now that we've got Regional Measure 1 and 2 behind us, we think it's time to start that conversation. And again, we're really gratified that you're here today to be with us. And I hope that wasn't too lengthy, but I wanted to try to cover as much ground as I could. And I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Stephen. I wish I could give you all day because I love this stuff. And you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's on this. This is the absolute wonderful work your agency is doing in collaboration with the self-helps and the state. One of the questions I had was, what self-help county isn't in the Bay Area? Or in the Bay Area isn't a self-help county?
Solano, I hate to say. I think you knew the answer to that question.
And the reason being is it failed, I think, three times going out to the people?
Yeah, and, you know, the difficulty for Solano, I think, has been getting to that two-thirds threshold. I think, in fact, a couple of the measures passed by majority vote. At least one of them did.
Two of them were, I believe, over 60%. Mid-60.
Yeah, and it's a shame that a third of the public could actually determine a region's success. But any questions of Steve before we move forward on to any other panelists?
I'd just like to say that here in Alameda County, where we now have passed BB with a 1% sales tax, you know, I go to Orange County in Southern California from time to time. It's like all the roads are just potholes. And what we've done in Alameda County may not be perfect. We may have a long way to go. But you can just see the difference in our local roads compared to those in Southern California. It's just in Orange County. It's just amazing, the difference. So I'm all for self-help.
You know, Assemblyman, there's an important point there for you, because I know you're all representing districts, but you all are looking at the needs of the whole state of California. And, you know, self-help works really well in the metropolitan areas. In the rural parts of our state, it doesn't work so good. You know, the tax base is lower. There's a lot less political inclination to support them. And I think the chairman's pointing out the fact that, you know, Solano has some rural elements in it, and so it's a little bit of a tweensy county as far as that goes. And one of the advantages, now that I've got the Regional Measure 3 slide on the screen, is that these regional measures are passed regionally, and we pool the votes. So if you go back to Regional Measure 2, I think Solano actually voted against it, I hate to say, Mr. Chairman, but we gave him a bunch of money anyway, because we were able to pool the votes and we pool the revenue, and we're trying to lift all the boats here instead of saying, well, you didn't pass it, so you don't get any. So I do think where you can make regional and collective action, it really is better for the region as a whole, and that is one of the flip sides, I think, of the self-help movement, that it's so county-based. And the fact is, people cross county lines every day when they travel, and they want that road fixed, whether it's all in one county or it's in three.
Thank you with that. Steve, we'll move on to...
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a quick one in there?
Yeah.
Thank you for thorough update and also the recognition of revenue with reform. And you did address some potential areas that I find very interesting. I wonder if you could identify one of the biggest reform changes that we should be considering as we're having conversations about revenue. And if it's not within MTC, if it's I recognize that Caltrans isn't here, so in fairness to them, but if you have some suggestions. And secondly, what role technology improvements that we might want to consider supporting, whether it's driverless cars or any other technology improvements, can you make sure is on our radar screen?
Well, I would like to go back, Assemblywoman, to a point I made at the hearing on Wednesday. The state's highway repair program is called the SHOP. It's the State Highway Operation Protection Program. The O is operation, and it receives a pittance of that money. And frankly, I don't know that I want to criticize Caltrans because they're trying to take care of pavement first and foremost. But the shame is that we are losing such an opportunity by not investing enough in improving the operational efficiency of the highway system. And those were the slides I showed you today. And as I said earlier this week, the benefit-cost ratio for those investments is 20 or 30 to 1. For a lot of the highway jobs we do these days, it's 1 or 2 to 1, if that. And so I really would draw your attention to that. And I don't think it would be out of line for the legislature to insist that a certain minimal amount of the SHOP go to those operational improvements because the bang for the buck is so great. The other place that I would draw your attention in terms of reform, and look, this is a consistent refrain that you hear from transportation folks all the time, is that it takes just too damn long to build things. And to some extent, you know, it's the Pogo comic strip. We have met the enemy and he is us. I mean, we love public input. We love public hearings. We love having everybody have their say. But what we tend to do in the Bay Area, especially, is everybody has their say 8 different times. And we go over and over and over again the same ground. The vast majority of the work that we're doing now is either public transit or highway work within the right-of-way of the existing facility. And I don't know why we need to spend so much time evaluating the environmental impact of those kinds of activities. I just don't. And so I'm afraid I'm going to vote for CEQA reform, which is something that I know many of you have been working on. But that really is a major cost driver here in California.
I think Mr. Cork has a question, then we'll move on to our next panelist.
There is one other regional transit that we didn't talk about too much, which is the Amtrak Capital Corridor train. It goes from San Jose up and past Sacramento. It takes about an hour longer to get from Hayward to Sacramento on the train. I take it anyway because it's an hour more that I have. I'm by myself, and I like that. But, you know, if we could make it an hour or even more shorter. I mean, there are places where we're right along the bay. The track bed isn't very good, and as sea level rises, that track is going to be underwater. It probably will be underwater the next time there's a big storm. So how about doing something about the Amtrak that we have already?
That's a very good point, Assemblyman, and I'd like to draw a comparison, if I could, to the train that's in Assemblyman Mullen's district, Caltrain. You know, Caltrain some time ago bought its right-of-way from the railroad, and it's in public ownership. And so they decide when their trains run, and they don't wait for freight. The freight waits for them. And what they've been able to do, as I showed you earlier, is schedule trains and dramatically expand service. So that they are getting phenomenal ridership gains. Now, I know the Capitals has also been gaining riders, despite, as you say, the disparity between the time of the travel on a car versus the train. But they would have much better success, in my opinion, if they controlled their own right-of-way. Now, that doesn't come cheap, but buying rail right-of-way in the Bay Area is never going to be a bad investment because we're going to find some way to use it.
So we'll move on to our next panelist. Please introduce yourself and who you represent.
Good afternoon. We're being nimble in changing spaces to be able to do the slides here. My name is Aegon Turplin. I'm the Regional Planning Director of SPUR. The title here mentions the former name of the organization, but because we're now working in the three central cities of the Bay Area, San Jose, San Francisco, and Oakland, the name of the organization is just SPUR. And so I work on our regional issues all throughout the Bay Area. I appreciate very much you having this hearing, and appreciate you including us, and also the notion of how can we break new ground. And so what I wanted to try to do briefly was to highlight a couple of the key problems and challenges that we see, and a couple of the key solutions. We could certainly spend all afternoon highlighting the number of challenges, but I wanted to hit just a couple of them. We will find some slides in a moment, but let me just begin a little bit by way of background. I was going to say a word about the organization that we released earlier this year, a report on seamless transit, and some of my remarks will focus on that directly. And one of the things that to highlight is it's really important when we think about transit, often we focus on the investment side of things, but we really wanted to highlight the rider experience. What is it like to be a rider navigating the number of systems throughout the region? So kind of one of the initial challenges I really want to address is that question of fragmentation. And we as a region, and I think Steve mentioned this when he talked about the polycentricity, we're a region with many centers, with many places, very dynamic places, but ultimately we have developed over time with a certain level of fragmentation, and our transit system is evident of that. So when we get it started, we can go. There, yes, exactly. Appreciate it. Well, I'm just going to cut back quickly to that. This is just a couple of examples of the reports that we've done, and appreciate having a couple of people from the jurisdictions and the places that we work. Even though we have offices in just the three central cities, we're really always thinking about region-wide work, and the organization was very involved in a lot of regional planning going back a number of decades. So here's a couple of challenges that we wanted to highlight as a starting point. The first has to do with this question of fragmentation, and this is a map produced by MTC that lists a number of the transit operators. And it's very easy to put this up there and say the solution to this problem is merger, and that is not where we're going to go with this particular slide and with this particular set of solutions, but it's very important to say that the experience of the individuals in our region trying to navigate across all of these systems, I would argue, is one of the reasons that ridership is not as high as it could be. And some of the slides that we saw earlier looking at the challenges associated with that. But this is really evidence of a region where people have a very strong sense of their community, of their place, and we've developed transit systems that are very aligned with each of those communities. But as we have a regional economy where people are really integrated together, crossing county boundaries all the time, and some recent research that we did through a major HUD grant through MTC looked at economic opportunity and upward mobility. And one of the things we learned is that people that leave their county and go to another county are the ones that are actually making more money. So the opportunity advances in one's life and one's opportunity to gain more income by moving to other counties from a commute perspective. So having regional mobility is a very important part of economic opportunity. But when we have such a wide variety of systems, it's difficult. And again, the experience to people that don't know a system is very difficult. Someone that learns how to ride Caltrain, what the fares are, what the schedules are, might be able to ride Caltrain. But then they might arrive at the Millbrae BART station, want to hop on BART for the first time, and they're confronted with a map like this. And if you're unfamiliar, it's difficult to go back and forth. And these are two systems that many people are much more familiar with than the local bus lines. And as we shift in a region, again, where people are really moving around, and we have transit that runs in a tremendous amount of places throughout our region. But this kind of this experience for ridership is confusing and something we can certainly do something about. Second challenge that I wanted to highlight has to do with really the local support for priority for transit. And this is something that's tremendously inconsistent throughout our region. And I would argue it also is one of the reasons why ridership isn't going up as much. Quite simply, the bus is stuck in traffic. And the likelihood to take transit has a lot to do with its competitiveness relative to driving. And if you're stuck in traffic, sure, you're going the same speed as the car. But once that car gets out, it can get to its final destination, which might be spread somewhere else, and the bus has to typically go on a fixed route. So getting buses in places where they can really be much faster and have that competitiveness with driving is a key solution. And this shows that, and this is the same data that you saw a short while ago, that those fixed rail systems, the ones that are out of traffic, are the ones where ridership is booming. They're also the ones, as we learned, need a tremendous amount of investment themselves, but primarily a lot of those that you see down below are the bus lines. And it's not that bus service is not a good solution, it's that the bus is too often in traffic. And so it isn't keeping up in a way that's competitive, but we can do something about it. In a lot of these environments where buses are operating or people are getting off transit, again, the local experience is difficult. It's dangerous to cross the intersection. Some places there aren't even crosswalks, there aren't sidewalks. And for people that are trying to get on bicycling, which is another way that you can get, you can solve your last mile problem, cities like San Jose are making tremendous strides in investment in bicycling to make that more viable. But a lot of places still, that kind of fine-grained detail on the ground is difficult and is an impediment to a lot of people that don't have experience doing this typically. The third challenge that I wanted to highlight is the one similar to the way you heard before about starting around the notion of beginning with a land use solution. It's truly this, that many of our transportation problems come from decisions that we've made about land use. A lot of our region we've built out in a way where the only way to get around is by driving. And when we try to serve these places with transit, they don't work as well. Oftentimes the bus might come to a place and then you have to cross a quarter mile of a parking lot to get to the front door. Again, a different kind of impediment to many people. And so the way we make our land use decisions, which we all know are at the local level, are ones that don't look at this kind of impact. So it's not a surprise when we look at overall kind of the location of employment in particular is not that much around the regional transit system. A lot of communities have not been putting the employment there. They haven't been putting the housing either, but I want to highlight the issue of employment because a lot of data has been done and studied to recognize that employment is a more important determinant on whether or not you take transit to work than where you live. If your job isn't located close to transit, you're not very likely to take transit. If you live a little further away but your job is right on top of transit, you're much more likely to take transit. And that is true on national studies and it's true on some analysis that's been done in the Bay Area. So when we only have a quarter of the jobs near regional transit, that becomes a diminishing factor. And then at the kind of micro-local level, places that are tremendously supportive of job growth generally have limitations on the amount of jobs. And this is an interesting one of SurveyMonkey, a company that's right across the street from Caltrain Station in Palo Alto. They've been searching around trying to find another place because they're growing so fast. The incredible limitations on job growth and office development in downtown Palo Alto. I think they're going to land in the hills right next to Hillsdale, Caltrain Station, where there's a major new investment taking place. But some of the constraints we're putting on job growth right near transit are not ways that we're going to allow that transit system to grow. And what I mean quite simply by that is if we would allow some of those places, and these are local decisions, to have more employment, have slightly taller buildings. If the demand is there, it might be appropriate. But some of this has to do with our overall emphasis on what we want to see happen. And so particularly in South Bay, it's not a surprise that many of the large firms aren't located on top of the transit systems. They quite simply couldn't put those many workers near that transit system. And so these are things that we have to try to work on. And I think Diridon in San Jose is a huge opportunity to really do this differently. A place where we already have a huge number of transit lines coming together, but it's essentially a blank slate. Surface parking lots ready for a huge amount of investment to happen. And as BART comes down and eventually will connect to Diridon, you will have this kind of hub where we can demonstrate the seamless connection between Caltrain and BART and the VTA light rail and all the buses that are focused there, in addition to the Capital Corridor, which also goes to Diridon as well. So let me turn to a couple of findings and solutions. As I said, there's a lot of other challenges I could highlight, but I just wanted to hit those three. To start with a key finding, which is that we have to stop presuming that everyone wants to drive. And I'm not assuming that you all presume that, but a lot of our planning for decades has been based on the assumption, these projections you can see going back, and these are at a national level, that driving will keep going up and up. But you can see on a national level, we kind of reached an inflection point and started to flatten out how many vehicle miles we traveled. And again, we could change that projection line and turn it up, but we really think we've changed. And some of this has to do with changing demographic patterns, changing preference patterns, but a huge opportunity has also opened up with shared mobility, the transportation network companies that a lot of people are starting to use. They may be in a vehicle, but they might pop in with one or two other people or take that as a short trip related to a day where they might take transit or grab bike share or do other pieces. How we're getting around has radically changed, and it's going to radically change much more in the next couple of decades. So the kind of investments we make needs to also change. So the first of the three solutions to highlight was the first one is we need to move towards a seamless transit system. But what we mean by that is not necessarily merging a bunch of the 27 together. It might, but more importantly, that rider experience. When you get on the system, is there a common fare? Is there an integrated schedule? When you get off Caltrain at Millbrae, is there a BART train right there, or did it just leave a minute or two before? Are the fares consistent between them? If you're a youth in one system, you can get on a youth system in another one. These are not that complicated problems for the 21st century, but they're ones that take a little bit of political will and getting everyone together. And so these are some of the things that we think are eminently doable and incredibly important for the region to move forward. Second one has to do with getting the bus out of traffic. This is what, as we saw before, the Caltrain and BART piece, they're out of traffic, their ridership's booming, and there's been some challenges often at the local level with a lot of the bus systems where we're trying to have these rapid systems and bus rapid transit, and they're not quite getting over the finish line as they could. But this solution isn't just true for bus rapid transit on El Camino or National Boulevard. It's also true for AC Transit getting on the Bay Bridge and getting into San Francisco or other parts of the region, express buses that are trying to go on the express lane network. Getting transit out of traffic is really going to be key to ridership growth. And then, again, at the local level, on the streets, making them safe for a variety of users. Transit needs space, but we also need space for bicycling, the safety for pedestrians, and those are really important investments that we're starting to see made. But these are things that we can do. And finally, I want to end with this issue of integrating land use and transportation. And this is arguably the most complicated, most difficult one. Land use power is vested locally. You at the state level can't radically change those things unless we move very forward in our thinking and break significantly new ground. But a couple of things have happened recently which I think are relevant. I mean, the first, of course, with SB 375, we have a mandate to do transportation and land use planning together at the regional scale. And one of the things we've seen in the Bay Area is the beginning of conditioning some transportation money on local decisions. That it doesn't make that much sense to invest a lot of regional transportation money in a community that's going to be opposing every housing development that comes forward. And I think tying those together, having more strings attached to the transportation money makes a lot of sense. So this region has made some strides for that, and we can probably go significantly further. Also on the local level, there's just a lot we can do in making places ones where these pieces come together. A lot of office parks don't allow any housing. And so you could quite simply have more of those uses together in places that become hubs of activity where people don't have to get in their car to grab lunch if they're sitting in an office park. It's not a state decision, but I think, again, on the incentive side, how do we move towards a direction where we start to have encouragement of places to really do this sort of mixed-use zoning, but also to really consider the location of employment around transit systems. And lastly, I wanted to kind of put this out there for those of you that have been around these issues for a long time know that it's not a new idea to consider having a unified regional planning agency for the Bay Area, but it seems appropriate for us to really put that back on the table now for a variety of reasons. We've done one Plan Bay Area. We're in the midst of updating that particular Plan Bay Area, but we in this region, going back 40 years, have a regional land use agency that's a council of governments and a regional transportation funding agency that's MTC, and the other regions in California just have a single unified agency. So it seems appropriate for us to think long term, what do we need for the Bay Area? Do we need a single regional planning agency that can really look at the land use questions and the transportation questions together as one staff? And to some of the issues that have been raised with sea level rise and others, these are all of a piece. These are all planning issues that have to be resolved together. So it seems like now might be a time to think about if this is an appropriate next step. With that, I conclude my remarks and take any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Mr. Mullen.
Thank you very much, Egon, for the presentation. Just your final comments there got me thinking about regional integration and, you know, all these different transit agencies we have. Some great work has been done with Clipper Card adoption across these different systems. But this issue around just schedule planning with all of our transit entities, you said there's a gap there, a problem there. Is that kind of work actively being done, or is that kind of thought process across systems? You know, you mentioned BART and Caltrain, say, at the Millbrae station, or linkages with Samtrans. I mean, my assumption is that these schedules are syncing up, but is that kind of work actually not occurring? Or if it is occurring, how might we improve that coordination given all of the different agencies that have to sync up? And I guess the Clipper Card is actually, that's more of a question for Steve and the MTC folks, but if you could talk about that regional schedule issue.
I'll just say briefly, I don't know the details of every single agency, but clearly there are a lot of agencies that are starting to talk together, and we have these kind of hub environments like a Millbrae station. It's not perfect. They're different systems, and so sometimes the schedules aren't syncing up. But this really then, it kind of begs a question of what's the appropriate scale at which we should be making those decisions. It truly, if the fair product, a youth fair, as I mentioned, or a senior fair, having consistency across it might be something that an MTC, a regional planning agency, could really determine, and then transit operators would all kind of adopt a similar line. I think we're seeing a lot of that, you know, one-on-one activity on the level of individual agencies, but I think it's setting the terms of how those operations should function that should be consistent that I think would be very helpful.
Court.
So you talked about people knowing the schedules. I mean, I've got my Google Maps app, and I've got my senior Clipper card, and, you know, I asked what sort of transit would we need to take from here to Redwood City, and it shows me. I take a BART train to Balboa Park. I change to another BART train, Millbrae. I go into the Caltrain. There's about a 13-minute difference between when I would arrive at Millbrae and when I would have to take Caltrain. Still takes an hour and 24 minutes, unfortunately. But I do think that we already have, with Google and perhaps other mapping systems as well, we have the ability to do this. Maybe there needs to be a special app for the Bay Area. But just the Google Maps thing I have here works quite well. Steve, can I use the Clipper card on Caltrain?
You know, it's funny. I saw one when Egon was speaking. You whipped out your Clipper card, and so did I.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he's making a point, though, if I could, on Clipper. This allows you to use all the systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't by itself give you a regional fare. In fact, this card has 4,000 different fare combinations on it. And that, in part, is an indictment of the system we have. And so I think what Egon is saying is, can we go a step beyond having one card so that we have a fare that, say, for example, when you ride BART to AC Transit, gives you a discount on AC Transit to encourage you to make that trip, just like we have a discount to go from Muni to BART in San Francisco. And you certainly can use this on Caltrain.
Yeah. So, Egon, is Google Maps enough, or what else do we need to integrate that planning, a trip?
Google Maps gives you the information, but it doesn't give you the familiarity. So when you get to that station, you have to then navigate, well, what's the right logo? Where is it located there? And if you just imagine other metropolitan regions one goes to, London is a relatively okay comparison because London has a series of private bus operators. But they all drive a red bus, and it looks the same to the rider. And it doesn't matter who's running it, who's paying for it. That's not the rider's problem. That's the transit system's problem. But to the rider, they hop on the bus with a single fare and a single card. So we have gone a step of the way with a card. we haven't gone a step of the way for a common map, a common language that, explains, is this a rapid bus? Is rapid the same in one part of the region as another part of the region? We have a lot of just inconsistencies in how we're doing it, and I think that, Google Maps is not to the familiar transit rider. It might be one something that one can do, but most people aren't taking transit. So we're trying to get a number of those people to move into the transit system.
One other comment. I was on the Hayward City Council. If I'd suggested that we use one of our Mission Boulevard lanes for a bus, I would have been lynched. I had a hard enough time getting anything done in, transportation when I was there, but we did. But I'd be lynched for taking one of our Mission Boulevard lanes and making it for a bus. Any comments on how we do this?
I think that this is evolving, and some of this has to do with, again, how it's explained and how people see some of the pros and the cons. For example, if that lane that might go towards fast transit service comes with other investments associated with a complete street, maybe a wider sidewalk, maybe more street trees, maybe some kind of other place for bicycling, people are, more open to that. I should note that the, bus rapid transit line is going in from San Leandro north into Oakland. That is having some dedicated lanes. It's not yet to Hayward, but so I think this is an evolving idea. And so, yes, in, at the local level, people are concerned about that loss, but some of it is demonstrating the vision of if we want a region where people aren't stuck in traffic, we're going to have to try to provide ways that those transit systems are truly going to be fast and competitive. Great. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Dodd has a question to Mr. Chu, but I want to be mindful of time. We have about 40 minutes, and I still have two panelists plus public comment. So,
okay, I'll cut mine down quickly. Thank you, Elon, for that report. I did work on transit sustainability here in the Bay Area, and, I think we're at 28 transit agencies now, if you call SMART. Jake, do we call SMART a transit agency?
Yes.
Okay, so the problem just keeps expanding. And I think Steve made the point that I was really going to make on, what did we call it before the Clipper, the TransLink? There's a reason why the it's not called TransLink anymore, because that was such a real pain in the neck to get all those different fares, to try to custom make it for every single transit agency. And I think in the future, we've got to be mindful, and this is just experience, where, look, at here's how we're going to do it. Transit agencies, you need to adapt to this, because this is where our future is, I think, in the Bay Area, is to try to get more seamless, to try to get, you know, we're never going to get to the model of London or, you know, even Washington Metro or New York or anything like that because we have so many. But we've got to get on a plane where we're, you know, getting back in that area. Frankly, technology may help us get part of the way there. Thank you.
Mr. Chu?
Hello. I have a quick comment and a question. First of all, with regards to our colleague, Mr. Quirk's question around transit-only lanes. In San Francisco, we've had now a seven-year running pilot program on that very topic, and it has worked very, very well. Obviously, we have a lot more density and congestion in our city, but I certainly think as our populations expand, commuter as well as residential, it's something that others ought to consider, and happy to have our transit agency share some information with others about that. My question had to do with the last slide, Aegon, that you had up, which was around the importance of thinking around regional governance integrating land use and transportation. I certainly think in recent years, as we have seen gigantic workforce campuses, say the Google and Apple type campuses, place enormous number of workers in areas unintegrated with transit and housing, that is significantly exacerbating the problems that we're having. And I'd be curious to just get very quick feedback, and then I want to suggest I'm very interested in a longer conversation at some point from Mr. Heminger, from your perspective with MTC, Michael, with your perspective from the Bay Area Council. Is this idea of regional governance something that is shared with your agencies that look across our region?
Well, very briefly, because that's a long subject. But I think the most important step has already been taken, and that is under SB 375, we now have one plan that deals with housing and transportation policy at the regional level. I think the institutional questions beneath that are secondary, frankly. I think they're important, and in fact, we have an effort underway right now where we and ABAG are in conversations about a way to better structure how the staff function performs. But I think the most important step has already been taken, and I don't want to take that for granted. And I think, as Agon said, we need to build on that plan and incentivize local government, because we're not going to tell them, we're not going to take away local control, but to incentivize them to come along with that plan that in large part is built upon the suggestions they made originally by where to put those priority development areas that I showed you on the map.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm aware that we're past the 3 o'clock mark and it is Friday, so we will want to move. But mine is a comment, and to be respectful of time, we can talk afterwards about it. But it was the comment you made about the possibility of more strings attached. And I do understand, as Steve just mentioned, the importance of incentives to our local entities. But I think we should be very cautious about actually attaching more either mandates or strings as opposed to rewards and incentives, because each community has to go back and build a consensus so that these are plans that people want to adopt, that these are behaviors that they want to be part of. So I just wanted to highlight that point and make sure that we keep it in mind as we talk about how to go forward, other regional government structures. Less a voice for more strings, more of a cooperative incentives.
Thank you, Egon, and colleagues, for those questions. We'll move on to our next panelist. Please introduce yourself and who you represent, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Michael Cunningham with the Bay Area Council, representing several hundred of the Bay Area's largest employers. Thanks for having this hearing, and thank you for inviting me to come today to give an employer perspective on transportation in the Bay Area. If it's not obvious, the employer interest in transportation is to the extent that it serves commutes and goods movement. And in a nutshell, the point of view of employers is that we are on the cusp of a transportation crisis that portends seriously negative effects on Bay Area economy, job creation, and the local and state tax revenues that those produce. In 2014, we asked members, residents of the Bay Area in our annual Bay Area Council poll if they shared that view, and 71% of them agreed that traffic in the Bay Area is not just bad, it's a crisis and urgent action is needed. And since 2014, when we did that poll, I think it's safe to say that nothing has gotten much better. BART and Caltrain ridership continue to grow at double-digit rates. Tremendous endorsement of the services provided by those agencies, but obviously creating serious peak congestion problems on those agents on those services that are increasingly difficult to accommodate over time. Those are the lucky folks. The larger share of the population that commutes by highway is experiencing misery. As of the mid-2014, the most recent data that I could find, the INRIX traffic data reporting service estimated that the average highway commute in the Bay Area took 28% longer than it would under free-flowing conditions. And keep in mind, that's the average, so half of trips are a lot worse than that. Half would be better. And I imagine that since then, chances are conditions have gotten significantly worse. Highway congestion obviously affects not just commuters, it affects goods movement, making the Bay Area an increasingly more challenging place to operate a goods movement dependent business, manufacturing, distribution, warehousing, logistics, the kind of industries that create middle-wage jobs for middle-skill individuals, the kind of jobs that, frankly, are in short supply, and a very concerning short supply in the Bay Area. Now, the Bay Area Council and employers in general tend to be very enthusiastic supporters of public transit. Steve mentioned the Bay Area has made a big bet on public transit, and employers have endorsed that bet, but we're also concerned that that investment is underperforming. For example, from 1990 to 2010, the share of commute trips made by public transit has been totally flat at 10%. From 2010 to 2040, the Plan Bay Area period, a period during which, as Steve indicated, 63% of all revenues will be spent on public transit, a period during which it is assumed that all growth will be accommodated within the existing footprint and the vast majority of new residents will be located in transit-served areas. A radically different land use assumption assumed. Transit would grow from 5% of all trips to 7%. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't believe in public transit and think that we should back off, but as employers, the business leaders that are members of and run the Bay Area Council, they would look at data like this in their own businesses and think, you know, maybe we're in a business that we don't know how to do, or maybe we just need to think really hard about how we're doing it. But clearly, we're not doing something right. And Steve identified a few of the things that that perhaps are not going right, and Egan identified a few of the things that could be done better. And like the employers of the Bay Area Council would agree with all of that. Now, the flip side of commute is land use and housing. Employers, the members of the Bay Area Council, employers in general, are tremendously concerned about the underproduction of housing, especially the underproduction of housing in the areas where jobs are being created at the most rapid rate. And it's resulting accelerating rise in apartment rents and housing costs. The obvious result, you know, is high job growth areas are exporting their housing to other parts of the Bay Area, and most concerningly, to outside of the Bay Area. Creating trips from outside the Bay Area, residents outside of the Bay Area to jobs inside the Bay Area, trips that we don't really well plan to serve, trips that we don't even have a planning infrastructure to figure out how to serve. And that's a real problem that employers want us to tackle. Now, in the face of all this, we're seeing something that I think of as self-help 2.0. If self-help 1.0 was counties asking residents to open up their checkbooks to fund transportation improvements, self-help 2.0 is employers looking to their bottom line to pay for transportation services to serve the commutes of their employees. The most notable example of this is our employer tech shuttles, but employers are doing a lot more. And the net result of it is some of the major employers, especially ones in Silicon Valley, in very poorly transit-served areas, have drive-alone mode shares below 50%. And that's an astonishing accomplishment. There's a significant public benefit to these programs, that just these private buses alone are taking tens of thousands of cars a day off of Highway 101. But even the employers that are operating this would readily admit this is not the solution to our transportation challenge in the Bay Area. It's not the solution to the commute challenge, certainly not to the goods movement challenge. It is not the challenge, it is not the solution to the overall transportation challenge in the Bay Area. They would agree, they urge us as the Bay Area Council, to push for improvements in the transportation systems that serve us all. Historically, the Bay Area Council and the employers' interest has been thinking about the big plans and the big projects that are going to provide more transportation capacity. And we still believe that's necessary. More capacity on roads, more rail capacity, more ferry capacity. But those are big projects and expensive projects, and they take a long time to do, and we just can't do enough of those fast enough. So businesses also are urging faster solutions that are less infrastructure heavy, less expensive, and that can be brought to bear much more rapidly. You've heard, I think, two people already talk about improving the transit system. Employers are very strong supporters of regional transit. It serves 10% of commutes. It's essential, especially in some particularly congested commute corridors. And when we look at the map of regional transit services in the Bay Area, it looks pretty complete. until, as Aegon pointed out, you think about the over two dozen agencies that are providing the services, the lack of coordination among them, and the difficulty of navigating the system. And to add one point that Aegon didn't touch on, the fact that there is no coordinated built-in planning process to rationalize a system and ensure that there's not redundancies or that opportunities are not overlooked. So I'll add on to Aegon's point, and from the point of view of employers, emphasize the need to optimize our regional transit system. Now, currently and for the foreseeable future, the vast majority of commute trips and the majority of goods movement trips are going to be made on the highway. There's limited opportunities to expand the capacity of highways, but there's significant opportunity to get more people down the highways. And our biggest opportunity is to make our carpool lane system work much more effectively. We have a pretty extensive carpool lane system, if you look at maps, but it's something of a hodgepodge, and I wouldn't really even call it a system. It's just a bunch of carpool lanes. The employer point of view is, you know, if you're investing in something, make that investment work. Connect the pieces together and create a system that works. That would include closing the gaps, enforcing occupancy so that single-occupant vehicles are not illegally taking up capacity in congested carpool lanes, considering places where it may make sense, maybe necessary, to increase the occupancy requirement from 2 to 3 in order to access a lane and in order to ensure free-flowing conditions and travel time savings. Questioning whether it still makes sense, if it ever did, to allow hybrids and electric vehicles into carpool lanes. Converting carpool lanes to high occupancy toll lanes, and overlooked adding here, but creating park and ride lots to facilitate the formation of carpools, and embracing the entrepreneurial app-based transportation car rideshare matching services that can make it so much easier to create both planned or on-demand carpools. Now, if the HOV lane system is about getting more people in each vehicle, technology and highway operations are about getting more vehicles in each lane. And Steve already explained to you, I think, how important this is. And from the point of view of employers, technology and operations needs to be on an equal strategic footing to construction projects. But it's been the poor stepchild for far too long. Technologies that are nowhere near the cutting edge, like adaptive ramp meters and adaptive dynamically networked arterial traffic signals, simply aren't deployed here. And technologies that are deployed, traffic sensors on highways to allow real-time monitoring of traffic conditions, are frequently out of service. We need to elevate traffic operations and traffic technology to an equal footing, put significant money into it, and optimize the operations of our existing system. Now, close with a final thought from a prominent Bay Area business. This is kind of picking up on Steve's point that it takes too damn long to do things. Yeah, from the employer point of view, it takes too damn long to do things, and we're much too bound by process, much too risk-averse, much too entrenched in the traditional ways of doing things and resistant to, say, partnerships with entrepreneurial transportation providers or information providers. This is kind of tongue-in-cheek. I don't really, by any means, expect transportation agencies to adopt the Facebook credo of move fast and break things. There's good reasons why transportation agencies need to be careful about what they do. But we are so far off to the opposite end of the spectrum that there's a lot of gain to be had from taking a few steps towards expediency, a sense of urgency, a degree of acceptable risk tolerance, and an openness to entrepreneurial participation. And I'll Just to close, I don't have any slide here on it, but Steve closed with a question or a challenge that anybody up for Regional Measure 3. From the point of view of the Bay Area Council and the Bay Area business community that we represent, yes. Thanks for having me here today. I look forward to the work of this committee. I wish you all good luck. You're doing very important work, and I hope to continue working with you.
Thank you very much. Any of the panel have any questions of the panelists? Seeing none, thank you very much. Josh, would you introduce yourself and then who you represent? Please proceed.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Josh Huber. I'm the policy director at the East Bay Leadership Council. The council is a membership of almost 300 businesses now, everything from large multinational corporations to the smallest businesses. It's been interesting listening to this. I think this has been a really interesting panel. I think there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the word crisis. Are we in a crisis? We're in the precipice of a crisis. I don't know. I do know. If you could just... perfect. So hopefully by now you've seen a diagram like this or this one. Where we are right now is about a 66 PCI on average in the Bay Area in California. That's about where that fair arrow is pointing on that curve. In the next 10 years, that's projected to drop to about a 55. The cost of resurfacing that will basically double. Crisis, edge of a crisis, whatever you want to call it, something has to be done, and it needs to be done soon. Been talking to a lot of businesses up and down the 680 corridor for many years now, and they often say, I mean, of course they talk about the regulatory regimes and the difficulties, you know, the permitting issues brought up by CEQA, but what they talk about first, they talk about housing, of course, and land use issues, but what they talk about first, most often to me, is transportation times. The gridlock in the East Bay has made business near impossible, and I think that's what we need to be keeping in mind here. There are a lot of ways you know it's a crisis. One is, you know, the dings in the windshield. Mr. Chair, I remember on Wednesday you talking about your recent incident. I have one of my own. I have a crack that's slowly expanding along my windshield, too. We talk about increased congestion, increased travel times, but I would suggest to you that one of the ways that you know this is a real crisis is the wide agreement that that we do need new revenue sources, that taxes are going to have to go up if we're going to hope to fix any of these problems. When MTC first called, they said, well, come and talk about some of the successes that we've seen. I kind of scratched my head for a minute, took a minute. It's like Caldecott Tunnel. That's a good, solid one, right? Saves me time every day on my commute as I actually go from San Francisco to Concord every day. So here are the funding sources for the Concord, for the Caldecott Tunnel. You'll notice that the lion's share is $194 million. Those are federal funds. I can tell you as a recently finished congressional staffer myself, the likelihood of that kind of source for a project like this coming up anytime soon, minimal at the very best. So we talked a lot about self-help, and I think that's the real success story. And I think that there's so the total state-funded portion of that project was about 12.5%. So what have been some of the other successes? What's kind of enabling this? When you know Measure BB just passed 2 years ago, it lost by just under 700 votes. In 2012, 2014 came back and received 71% of the vote. This is a list of the uses of these funds as proposed. It's about $7.8 billion through 2045. Good, solid success. I would suggest especially this 71% of voters is telling here that not only are they still saying, as I mentioned, that we need new revenue sources, they've actually proved it. They have actually proved that they are willing to support these things. I think that, though, that there are some conditions under which that is true, and I think, Assemblywoman Baker, you've raised some of those. We still hear about the issues of Caltrans, some of the inefficiencies there, some of the inefficiencies raised by the CEQA process. All these things our membership agrees really do have to be addressed. But what is the first priority here? The first priority is making sure that those costs to maintain our system just as it is now, we need twice what's available for this funding, right? Those are the numbers that we keep hearing. Similarly, Contra Costa has also proved, it's about almost, well, it's 10 years ago now, but by about the same percentage, 71% supported this measure. It was a smaller measure, but it, you know, it led to some really important projects. I think the message I'm trying to give here is that, fair enough, no one wants to pay more taxes. But I think there's a sense, especially among the business community, I can tell you, and especially in the East Bay, as this whole system grinds to a halt, that something has to be done. It has to be done now, and it has to be done in part by all of you. They're willing to pay, as I say. But they want to know what they're going to be used for. I mean, in the self-help tax measures, there's an expenditure plan, so that's relatively transparent to voters. They also want to know, as I mentioned, that these funds are going to be used well and efficiently. All of this together, it seems to me, represents an opportunity for you and an opportunity for us. But it's going to take leadership. We need you. Please get this done. That's all I have.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Mr. Chu, looks like you're ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just assert, I think something we all can agree on here in this room is that we are, as a region and as a state, in the midst of a transportation crisis for drivers bumping over potholes and cyclists and pedestrians dealing with safety issues, transit riders on late or non-existent or broken buses and trains. Just to mention one of the data points that Mr. Heminger had mentioned, $20 billion of needs for our roads over the next till I think 2040 in the Bay Area, and then another $20 billion when it comes to transit. I think all of our panelists know we're in the midst of a special session where the major proposals around what we need to do as a state put together potentially about $6 billion worth of new revenue sources, but devote that 100% to highways and roads, 0% to transit. And my question to you, and I would love, because we don't have a lot of time, a lightning round, putting aside politics, which I know is hard to do, if it were just you being able to decide what the appropriate mix ought to be, 100%, zero, or something else, as far as the mix between investing in roads and highways and bridges versus transit, what do you say to us is the right ratio for us to think about this?
I'd like to take a crack at that.
Okay, and I just love just quick answers because I know we don't have a lot of time.
One of the biggest problems in the East Bay is the 680 corridor. From Pleasanton to Walnut Creek, if you wanted to take transit, it takes about an hour, a little more. Unfortunately, during rush hour, it probably takes about the same time driving. I don't know exactly what that balance is and how we free some of that up. I don't see an immediate, extension of a full BART-like system is going to be in the cards, even with tons of self-help money. I think that I think that it's going to vary by area. I mean, and the existing infrastructure that's already in place.
Any other questions? Oh, Mr. Cunningham, go ahead.
I can just give a quick response from the Bay Area Councils. Our members did consider the revenues on the table in the special session, and they did endorse all of them. They are all essentially automobile or highway user fees. And it's the point of view of at least the members of the Bay Area Council that highway user fees should be devoted to highway improvements. Other sources of funds, sales tax has been used, general fund bonds, cap and trade, are more appropriate for public transit, and we certainly would endorse a large increment of additional funds to public transit, but we don't see automobile fees automobile user fees as being the appropriate revenue source.
I'll answer quickly. I don't know what exact percentage, because a lot of the state is quite different, but one of the ways we've really looked at the question is, if you have to think about a corridor, there were to be fees on 101 and 280. Those fees could and should be reinvested not just back in the freeways or highways, but they should also be reinvested back in Caltrain and the transit services. So I think we have to reflect upon it as a corridor that we're trying to move people across, and think about a way that some of the highway funds that are generated by automobiles can go into transit. But it should be, I was going to start by saying, the Bay Area offers a very good and inspiring number, which is close to 2/3 of the money going towards transit. I don't know what that looks like if you apply it to Riverside County and San Diego County, but it certainly should be much, much higher than what's being proposed.
With that, I think we'll move on to public comment. I have approximately 10 speaker cards, and what I'd like to do is limit you to about 2.5 minutes, and if you need more time, we'll try to, but we're getting close to the witching hour. So what I'd like to do is call Robert Rayburn from the BART director.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Robert Rayburn. I serve on the BART Board of Directors. I'm also on the governing board for the Capital Corridor Joint Powers Authority. I want to thank you for this opportunity to provide public comments today as you examine these important transportation needs here in the Bay Area. The special legislative session was called to enact permanent and sustainable funding for repair and maintenance of our transportation system, and this is a great opportunity for much needed action. An important synergy exists here. Better roads enhance transit bus trips, improving access to rail stations and safety for bicyclists. In turn, public transit reduces carbon emissions and congestion on our highways. BART is the backbone of our transit system in the Bay Area. Transbay BART trains already carry more passengers during the commute peaks than the Bay Bridge. Like the state's highways, our transit system is in need of significant investment to maintain a state of good repair and meet growing demand. BART's capacity challenge continues to grow in the Bay Area and averages this July over 427,000 passengers each weekday. BART will further be challenged in the coming days and weeks as vacations end and school sessions begin. The environmental benefits are tremendous. As BART removes over 150,000 cars from Bay Area highways each day, and our riders save over 280,000 gallons of gas and keep 5 million pounds of carbon emissions from entering the atmosphere each day. Our 43-year-old system has a significant capital shortfall, totaling $4.8 billion. The BART board is considering placing a ballot measure on the November 2016 ballot to raise revenues toward this shortfall. However, BART will still need significant funding from the state. This year, the BART board prioritized our legislative goals. First, support cap and trade funding for transit and housing. Thank you, Steve, for priority development areas.
Mr. Rayburn, I'm
that
sure
is
to wrap
the solution.
It up,
I want to ask that you support a couple of bills, the ABX8 and SBX7, which would increase sales tax on diesel fuels as well. We have to have the ABX7 and SBX8, which would double the percentage of cap and trade funds. Cap and trade allowances are essential to offset, for example, the Capital Corridor diesel fuel expenses and help us achieve our board adopted vision on the Capital Corridor to electrify those trains. I hope as you consider the issues in front of you that you will agree that additional funding for transit is much in need and will have a solid benefit for the Bay Area. Thank you.
Thank you. So now I'm going to call up Christian Peoples, but would Anna Lafort and Tyler Frisbee be ready right after to go so we can be efficient? Sir, please introduce yourself and who you represent, and also would you please limit it to about 2.5 minutes?
Chair Frazier, members of the committee, my name is Chris Peoples. I am an elected at-large director of the Alameda Contra Costa Transit District. My fellow board members this year have elected me as the president of the board of directors. I also serve on the Contra Costa Transportation Authority as the representative of all four bus agencies in Contra Costa County. And to add a personal note, I've lived in Oakland for about 40 years, and I've worked in San Francisco, in Los Altos, in Palo Alto, and in San Jose, and I gave up my car 18 years ago, so I know all those commutes very well. I want to second what Steve Heminger and a number of people have said here. We run bus agencies. We understand the problems with potholes and congestions. Realigning the front end of a bus is no joke. But you also need to understand the importance of the need of operational funds for all our transit agencies. If SB 375 and the sustainable community strategies are going to work, then we need transit near and frequent to both housing and employment. The Plan Bay Area and the priority development areas tries to concentrate the housing in areas that are transit served, but their minimums are pretty minimum, 15-minute service during the peaks. You need a whole lot more than that if you're going to convince people to not take transit. So I was at the Caltrain press conference last week supporting the bills by Mr. Mullen and Mr. Chu, and I would encourage you to remember, I think as Mr. Heminger pointed out quite well, locally our voters and our taxpayers have stepped up. For AC Transit alone, we've gone out for a parcel tax. We've extended it twice. Our voters have voted for it by over a two-thirds vote three times. In Alameda County, we've put on a sales tax. That's been voted for over two-thirds three times, the latest time expending it to a penny. It's now time for the state to step up and help fund all these functions. And as has been pointed out by one of the national tax organizations, in California, automobiles only pay about one-third of their costs. The sales taxes that pay for roads, that pay for potholes, that really should be a user fee. And I agree with the business community that maybe all of that should go to pavement. But if that's the case, all the general fund money should then be going to transit and to land use.
Thank you, sir. Anna, please state your name and who you represent, please.
My name is Anna LaFord. I'm a deputy director at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, and I'm here to make a statement on behalf of San Francisco Supervisor Scott Weiner. He is the chairman of my board and also represents San Francisco on the MTC and the Golden Gate Bridge Highway and Transportation District. Thank you for holding this hearing and seeking input from the Bay Area. I encourage you to help us solve our significant financial challenges around public transportation. Roads matter, and we support road funding, but transit matters as well, and I urge you to make the state a significant and reliable partner in our region in meeting our transit needs. Rather than viewing these as competing needs, we strongly believe that they are complementary. If you are a freight operator or a shipper, transit riders can be your best friend. Let's invest in the entire transportation system to keep our region strong. The Bay Area is a major driver for the state's economy and its budget. For our economy to function and continue to grow, our transportation systems need to meet the needs of our growing population. These systems are old, overtaxed, and at a breaking point. Our pavement condition and congestion are among the worst in the country. Transit use is skyrocketing, with BART, Muni, and Caltrain together carrying more than 1.1 million passenger trips per day. Not only are these systems packed, they are becoming less reliable given the impacts of the region's nearly $20 billion transit maintenance backlog. This situation will only get more intense as the Bay Area grows by another 2 million people and 1 million jobs in the next quarter century. We are working very hard in the Bay Area to meet our transportation challenges. Almost all of our counties are self-help counties, adopting local transportation sales tax measures, bonds, and other funding measures. Last year alone, San Francisco adopted two transportation revenue measures, a $500 million bond, and an increase in support for Muni from our general fund. And Alameda County adopted an additional half-cent sales tax for transportation. San Francisco will go to the ballot again next year, and we are all going to work hard to pass a major BART bond. But this is not enough. We need significantly more support from the state and potential new regional funds to replace and expand our transit fleets, lay hundreds of miles of new track, replace antiquated train control systems, build new subways, high occupancy vehicle lanes, at bus rapid transit lanes, make our streets smoother and safer, and bring Caltrain and high-speed rail to the Transbay Terminal. Finally, as part of our work to strengthen the region's core, I ask for your partnership to plan collaboratively for a second Transbay Transit crossing. There is a limit to how many extensions we can continue to attach to the existing Transbay Tube, and traffic continues to mount on the Bay Bridge, the most congested link in our region. We must plan and invest now comprehensively to prepare the region for the future. I look forward to working with you to meet these critical needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Tyler Frisbee. Try to keep it at 2.5 minutes, please.
I'll do my best. My name's Tyler Frisbee. I'm the policy director at the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We brought out our best East Bay weather for you. You're glad you're not over in foggy San Francisco. I want to start by echoing the calls that you've heard around increasing funding, particularly with a focus on transit. Within San Francisco, the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition has been honored to be a part of various task forces and projects focusing on looking at how San Francisco funds itself. And as you just heard from Anna, the city is very focused on finding ways to increase our own transportation funding. But we need help, and particularly given the regional nation of transportation in general, this is a regional problem and consequently a state one. I also want to echo the statements you heard from all the panelists highlighting the need for increased transit funding, and we very much appreciate Assemblymember David Chu's leadership on that issue. Transit is critical to helping people get around the Bay Area as our housing prices increase rapidly and the nature of people's employment changes. They need reliable ways to get around that don't result in the clogging of our freeways. Transit is the best way for us to meet those needs. While we're in the midst of a conversation about congestion, I want to bring in another issue, a transportation issue that's critical in San Francisco, and that's safety. San Francisco, as you've probably heard, has committed to eliminating all traffic fatalities by 2024. San Jose has also recently made a very similar commitment. And as we look at funding and as we look at encouraging states and communities to meet transportation goals, I encourage all of you to not back off of safety. It's very easy for us to think of fatalities and injuries as a necessary byproduct of getting around. But the reality is that shouldn't be an accepted or expected part of our daily transportation trips. Cities should be encouraged and should focus on slowing down our streets, eliminating all traffic fatalities, and protecting the people who are getting around, whether they're walking, biking, taking transit, or driving. So I encourage you to think of safety along with congestion. Finally, as I wrap up my 2.5 minutes with Dave Snyder in the corner, I would be remiss if I didn't highlight the role that ATP funding can play in reducing maintenance costs and providing additional options for people as they get around their communities. Thank you.
Thank you. That reminds me of the safety exemption or to CEQA that I carried in was signed by the governor for San Francisco. Daryl Halls, please. And then David Zesser, and then Carissa Kevin-Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick, Daryl Halls, Executive Director of Solano Transportation Authority. Just had a couple comments. I want to echo the comments. We need ARM 3, so I'll just be succinct. 55% vote. I mean, you talked about Solano County. Absolutely. We've tried a couple times. We've gotten 60%. I think our county was a little skeptical about the bridge toll 10 years ago. It has a proven track record. Tremendous amount of projects, programs, transit services in the Bay Area. Has a legacy, if you're not aware, of delivering projects. And so on behalf of the congestion management agencies, which work with MTC and Caltrans, not only do we deliver a Bay Bridge program and the ARM-2, but we also have a history of federal obligation funds always over-obligating. So we're able to get money from other states. So we can deliver the projects and the programs. We just need the resources. On SB 375, that's obviously a requirement. We're working on that. What's critical is that we get the resources to the region so the region can get the money to the locals so they can obtain those goals. And that is not really happening yet. We're really doing grants. And so the more we can get funding into the regional level, I think will be a lot better result. There's also legislation, I think Mr. Frazier mentioned, managed lanes, extending that authority, very critical. There's legislation to do that. Highway 37, for example, is being looked at. Bay Area right now is working on the express lanes that Steve mentioned. Again, opportunity for entrepreneurial public-private partnerships, very critical. Freight was mentioned, I believe, by Michael. There is a national freight plan. There is a state freight plan. Southern California has been aggressively doing this for 15 years. We now have a regional freight plan that's about to wrap up. We need to have a game plan for freight in this region, so I encourage that we do that as well. And then lastly, I think we mentioned a number of transit systems that are growing in ridership. Capital Corridors, absolutely, we're part of that system. BART, we didn't mention the ferry too much. The ferry's had a tremendous increase in ridership. So obviously, more investment in those opportunities is important. I think ARM-3 is an example to do that, so thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. David?
Good afternoon. I want to start by acknowledging that I'm vastly underdressed. I biked here today. My name is David Zisser. I'm an attorney at Public Advocates. We're a civil rights organization in San Francisco, and we work regionally on transit equity, advocating around Plan Bay Area, among other things. And I want to just take the next 2 minutes to point out sort of a glaring omission in this panel. I want to first appreciate, actually, that you even held this panel. I think it's been very educational for all of us. But you know, while this panel had a lot to offer, it's missing a voice around equity. And while I'm at it, it's also missing some diversity. And I think I can say that safely here. When we talk about equity in this context, we're talking about how investments serve, number one, and don't harm low-income communities and communities of color. And that needs to be a key part of this conversation, especially given the ridership of transit here and in other places. Some examples of the types of things that we're talking about are when we talk about housing, I think Steve may have mentioned it, but it wasn't highlighted in terms of affordable housing near transit. Low-income folks are the highest propensity transit riders. They also depend on transit to get to their jobs. So when we think about placing housing near transit, we need to prioritize affordable housing. Similarly, when we talk about the jobs housing match, we need to talk about income matching. It's not necessarily as illustrative to talk about how housing is placed in relation to jobs if we're not thinking about how those two things match in terms of income and affordability. Another example is thinking about the types of transit that serve our low-income communities and communities of color, especially bus service and investing and expanding bus service in those communities. In addition, while these investments are important, especially in our priority development areas, PDAs are disproportionately low income and communities of color. So we need to make sure that investments actually benefit the people who live there and aren't displacing them, and develop solutions for protecting people against displacement. We have an affordability crisis. It affects all of us, but it hits low-income communities the hardest, and we need to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Clarissa? Please state your name and who you're representing, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Clarissa Cobbins-Hagen. I'm a community planner with Transform. Transform believes that all Californians should have access to opportunity, regardless of income and background, and that transportation is that vital connection that determines one's access. So I echo a lot of the comments that David, my colleague, mentioned. I would say that now more than ever, the Bay Area is experiencing an alarming affordability crisis, as you've heard multiple times today, a housing crisis, a lack of transit resources crisis, and as gas prices rise, Bay Area residents are turning to transit, particularly BART, Muni, Caltrain, and they're bursting at their seams. And our current systems are underfunded, and they can barely keep up with this demand. We experience delays or breakdowns frequently, and too many people are waiting for buses for too long. Where transit is not an option or has been removed as an option because of lack of funding, the majority of residents commute hours on end in gridlock. This is not sustainable. As Aegon mentioned, we live in an era of vastly moving technological advancement. TNCs, car share, bike share, carpooling apps, those all need to be on the table when we think about transportation solutions. But we also need to think differently about transportation investments. For decades, we've been planning to build our way out of congestion, and we know that we cannot do that. People are moving from one part of the region to the next on a regular basis, and we can't continue to think about how to move people by thinking of how to move cars as fast as possible. Rather, we should be thinking about how to move people and goods more efficiently on our existing system. So I want to urge you to support Assembly Member Chu's bill. This is one of our few chances to increase transportation revenue and fill that kind of backlog in billions of dollars of shortfalls on our transit systems. I like the idea of hot lanes, but as you should all know, that Transform is really saying a supporter of express lanes that put equity at the forefront. So how can we get more buses to move in express lanes that are not just corporate shuttles? And this is possible if we make transit as a key component to that strategy, making the most efficient use of our existing highways that are already under-resourced in terms of maintenance. So today I just ask that you would keep in mind our state mandates to get people onto transit and out of their solo driving vehicles. And to do this, we need to seriously fund the transportation need. And as you've heard today multiple times, that we're severely underfunding our current systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we'll move on to Michael Gregory. In the queue will be Bob Vinn and Matt Reagan. Michael Gregory, please introduce yourself and who you represent, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Gregory. I'm a former two-term council member in the city of San Leandro. I'm here representing myself. Thanks to MTC, 10 years ago we received a $450,000 planning grant to develop our transit-oriented development plan for the city of San Leandro. And I represented the downtown district for San Leandro, California. Three community advisory committee meetings doubled and tripled in size before we ended our outreach, and the plan went into place, and then the recession hit, redevelopment went sideways, and off we went. So we went either into hibernation or what were we going to do? And we decided to do a lot of planning. So out of that grant and a lot of work with a group called Great Communities Initiative, we developed some success. So I'm here to highlight a couple of successes in my 2 minutes and get the heck out of here. We are now building phase one of a tech center on some property next to our BART station. And it's a 100,000 square foot building that is going to house OSI Soft, and then there'll be two and three more phases to follow. So it's going to be a high tech economic growth center for high paying jobs and tech. The founder of OSI Soft he presented us with a public private partnership to develop in fiber optic loop in San Leandro when he learned that we had 11 miles of conduit buried underneath our streets. So he had gold. And he was willing to invest in San Leandro. And now we're going to be developing properties and a lot more around San Leandro along that loop. Federal government gave us another $3 million to build an 8-mile extender into Oakland with that. We are also home to the highest rate of childhood obesity and asthma in San Leandro. And as a council member, I couldn't look sideways, couldn't get things going with the schools. I also served on the Alameda County Transportation Commission, learned about the Safe Routes to School program. So we got going in San Leandro. We have one north-south connector that is Class 2 bike lanes. There's five schools on that route. And today, with school starting this week, it's still clogged with cars. So I'm convinced we're just starting the work there, and we can do it. The tech center is going to attract millennials. And what we now know about millennials is they don't drive cars. They like to live near where they work. And we're probably going to see a boom in San Leandro with some of these projects going on that will attract more millennials because we're laying the infrastructure for mass transit. BRT in San Leandro. We only have 2 miles of it. Berkeley opted out. Thank you. And we were not able to extend our route all the way to Bayfair, reaching the southern part of San Leandro. But we are going to be looking forward to building that, and the city is going to be well set for the next growth spurt in the Bay Area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Bob Vinn, please. Please introduce yourself and who you represent.
Bob Vinn, Assistant City Engineer for the City of Livermore. I have a letter from Mayor John Marchand I'd like to read in the record. He was unable to attend today's hearing. Dear Chair Frazier and members of the committee, on behalf of the Tri-Valley, I would like to thank you for your support of Bay Area transportation systems, which are key to supporting the continued growth of the Bay Area's economy. As you know, the Tri-Valley is considered to be a hub of technology and innovation and serves as an economic engine for the entire Bay Area region. In fact, the Tri-Valley is growing at a faster rate than the Bay Area as a whole, which is one of the reasons why I-580 is considered one of the most congested freeways in the Bay Area. It's also a major freight corridor linking the Port of Oakland to the Central Valley and beyond. It's projected that the number of households in the Tri-Valley will grow by 31% between 2010 and 2040, and the commute volumes continue to increase from the Central Valley and Tri-Valley to San Francisco, Santa Clara, and San Mateo counties. We also know that the volume of Central Valley commuters on the I-580 corridor continues to grow, as does their need for a reliable and efficient interregional rail link to the Tri-Valley and Bay Area job centers via BART. Filling potholes and maintaining our existing system is important, but continued expansion of the system is crucial to address the needs of a growing population and ensure economic prosperity. Transportation investments in the Bay Area, like connecting BART with the Altamont Commuter Express in the Tri-Valley, as envisioned in the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's Regional Rail Plan, will create an efficient interregional rail network that will yield economic, environmental, and quality of life benefits for the greater Bay Area. These transportation enhancements will provide better access between Central Valley and Bay Area employment and destination locations, encourage economic growth and revitalization, including transit-oriented development in the Tri-Valley, and interconnect an educated workforce, all of which promotes a healthy quality of life for local residents. This is why the Tri-Valley region wants to partner with you and strongly supports your efforts to increase transportation funding for the Bay Area transportation systems to ensure we can complete this crucial interregional rail link between BART and ACE in the Tri-Valley. Thank you for continued support. John Marchand, Mayor of Livermore. May I submit the letter to the...
Yes, please, and we'll make sure a copy of it gets to all of our members on the committee.
And while we wait for our next speaker, I'm happy to help circulate that letter as well if necessary.
Chairman Frazier, committee members, Matt Regan, I'm a colleague of Mike Cunningham's at the Bay Area Council. I'm also a member of the Regional Planning Committee, and like some of you, I spend way too much time in this room. I want to put some perspective on why this committee meeting is so important and why the Bay Area's regional transportation system is more important perhaps than any other. A recent LAO report that published income tax returns for the year 2013 showed that in LA County, with their 10 million people, they produced $13 billion in income taxes. In the Bay Area, with our 7.5 million people, we produce $21 billion in income taxes. So our economy is driving the state's economy and driving the state budget. And Chairman Frazier, you had the good fortune of being in the legislature, unlike your colleagues, when you were cutting every year. They are a little luckier in more recent times. We have money to spend, and that's in large part because of the Bay Area's thriving economy. We also have
the worst roads. Steve said it was the third worst. My data said the second, but I'll cede to him in the nation. We have 40% of our greenhouse gas production in the Bay Area comes from cars stuck in traffic. So it's an environmental problem as well. As Michael Cunningham referred to earlier, we support all and any revenue sources that are on the table to fund transportation projects, including the extension of the Prop 30 sales taxes, provided they are put in a lockbox and spent for transportation only. As you know, if they go into the general fund, they're gone. They have to be protected for transportation only. We would also like to see CEQA reform included in any transportation proposal that comes out of the legislature this year. Mr. Chairman, you said you had takeaways, action items from this meeting. I would put to you that you make CEQA reform one of them. If we can do CEQA reform for stadiums and arenas, surely we can do CEQA reform for carbon-reducing transit projects that help the general public. The governor famously called CEQA reform the Lord's work. I call it job security. I've been working on CEQA reform for almost a dozen years, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and more pervasive. We need to reverse that trend. A recent study by Holland and Knight showed that over 60% of CEQA lawsuits are filed against infill development and transportation projects. That is not environmental protection. That is abuse of the law. So I would urge you to make CEQA reform a part of your efforts this year. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to move on to Ken Bukowski, and in the queue will be Matt Vanderslice and Dave Campbell.
Hi, my name is Ken Bukowski, and I volunteer to record all the ABAG and MTC meetings, and they're available on regional-video.com. I'm a former council member 24 years and was on the State Transportation Committee for the League for 18 years. And I think we're really missing the boat when it comes to revenue. You know, if you have a piece of vacant land in the middle of nowhere, no money can be earned. But if you put transportation access next to that land, now money can be earned. So transportation is a utility for land use, and therefore property owners should be paying their fair share of the maintenance. If you approve development and you get an impact fee, when that's over, the public is stuck paying for the maintenance while the property owner is collecting all the money for the rent. And in view of the increases in rent, a share of that money should be used to pay for transportation maintenance, and there should be some way to measure the transportation use of each property, whether it's a sliding scale or with technology. So I think you're really missing the boat on collecting revenue. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Please introduce yourself and who you're representing, please.
Matt Vanderslice with Greenbelt Alliance. Thank you, Chair Frazier, and the rest of the committee for having this very important conversation. We're glad to be a part of it. One of the themes that we've heard very strongly today is this interrelationship between land use and transportation, and I think that needs to be a theme for throughout the special session on transportation. I really appreciate this emphasis on revenues and reform, because there are many, many ways that we can make sure that our transportation dollars are doing more for us to create a stronger, healthier economy, to protect our environment, to strengthen public health, and to advance social equity. As I think about how we spend our next tranche of transportation dollars, I think about many of the challenges the Bay Area is facing, that we have 322,000 acres of land at risk of sprawl development in the Bay Area. That's an area 10 times the size of San Francisco. We also have our climate challenges. I was just reading from the Bay Area Council today about a new report that says that some scientists have said that climate change is likely contributing 15% to 20% of the impacts of the California drought right now, as well as our affordable housing crisis. So many of these interrelated issues that we can solve together, particularly by leveraging our transportation dollars. So in terms of examples that we can look to, one from Contra Costa County that we're very excited about. Back in 2004, the voters passed Measure J, which links land use and transportation by saying, if you're getting these transportation dollars, you need to have a growth boundary and comply with that growth boundary. That's something we can export to the rest of the state to make sure we're using our transportation dollars effectively. And here with Plan Bay Area, we have this One Bay Area grant program that's, again, linking land use and transportation to reward jurisdictions that are growing in smart ways that help improve the economy and strengthen people's lives. So four quick things that I think the legislature can and should do. One, do more to have performance-based approaches to transportation funding, like those two examples I just gave. Number two, significantly increase funds for public transportation. Number three, make sure that our transportation projects are protecting the natural environment. Particularly think about a regional advanced mitigation program that could be included in here to bundle up mitigation dollars for natural resource protection. And number four, make sure we're prioritizing the needs of low-income individuals. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Dave Campbell.
My name is Dave Campbell. I'm the advocacy director with Bike East Bay. We are formerly the East Bay Bicycle Coalition, and we're here in support of more money for the active transportation program. The current cycle of that program just received $1 billion in applications statewide. That's essentially $10 chasing every dollar that's in the program. We need to double that program and more to fund the types of projects that are going to build walkable, bikeable neighborhoods in communities like Dublin's downtown, Telegraph Avenue around MacArthur Bart, McDonald Avenue in Richmond. So many more projects that we're trying to get walkable communities around transit. And the problem we're having is not just funding. We've got these projects ready to go. We're getting them ready to go. Treat Boulevard at the Pleasant Hill BART station is another one. But we have so much traffic coming off of the freeways right there that part of the reform of Caltrans, we certainly support better operations for the freeways. The freeways next to these transit stations and PDAs have to work better. But the local arterial streets also have to work better. And that's a Caltrans responsibility to work with the cities. Whether it's a state highway or not, the traffic is joined with the traffic on the freeway. So we have to make those freeways work better so our arterials work better, so people can walk and bike on Treat Boulevard to get to Pleasant Hill BART, on Dublin Boulevard to get to West Dublin BART. I can go on and on and on. And we need money to make this happen. So thanks. More money for the active transportation program. Thank you.
Jeffrey Heller, and in the queue would be Anna Levin. Jeffrey.
Thank you for holding this hearing. I'm Jeffrey Heller from Heller Manis Architects and Urban Planners. I'm also on the Bay Area Council Board and Transportation Committee, but I'm here speaking for myself. I wanted to just mention that while all of the things that have been discussed today and the profound demands and requirements for transportation have been discussed, the one missing piece of the conversation is the long-range, long-term planning that you all need to be thinking about at the same time. And by that, I mean that BART, for example, with its plateauing ridership is because BART is out of time and out of capacity, and that BART has to have some much broader thinking, as in the form of a second tube, and also as an architect for two major projects in San Francisco at the Transbay Terminal, which have contributed over $100 million to that project. The connection by tunnel of Caltrain to the Transbay is something that has to be thought of. So those are profound additions of money to the pot of what is needed in the future, but I think that the committee should be thinking very much about how that might be funded and how the federal government might be engaged in that. And I think that effort has to come from the state. As Steve Hamminger said, the Bay Area is highly supportive of taking on financial burden. And I think that that plus state plus federal is needed to do something other than maintain and refine what we have, which is not enough to address our problem. So thank you very much.
Thank you. The last speaker, Adna Levin.
Adina Levin. And good afternoon, assembly members and staff and experts. Adina Levin with Friends of Caltrain, which is a nonprofit with over 5,000 participants on the Peninsula Corridor from San Francisco through San Jose supporting sustainable transportation and transit supportive policies in the area. Want to make 3 points on what we've talked about before we can all go home. First of all, when Assembly Member Chu mentioned what is the right amount of funding to go to transit, is that right amount zero? No, that is not the right amount. So thank you to Assembly Member Chu and the other representatives who are supporting transit funding as part of the package in Sacramento this season. I would urge you to support that in addition to looking forward to a regional Measure 3 to look at some of our region's major priorities like the second tube and the downtown extension connecting Caltrain and high-speed rail into San Francisco. So more than zero. Second point is with regard to looking at the freeway corridors, and the question is, should we think about drivers separately from transit? Should we think about them in different pieces of our brain? You've got a driver over here, a transit rider over there, and based on experience, that seems to be short-sighted. That hockey stick curve that you saw from Caltrain's growth wasn't an accident. It was when the service became competitive and superior to driving, all of a sudden you saw that ridership increase because people are rational and people are making a good choice, which means that with things like Assemblymember Mullins' bill, sadly he had to leave, but looking at that 101 corridor, looking at the 500,000 people who are traveling back and forth in the day and saying, how do we look at that corridor and address the congestion in part by moving people into more space-efficient modes. There are some really powerful ideas, thanks to MTC from doing some recent research that may be helpful, and I look forward to what Assemblymember Mullen will do over the next year in looking forward to what those solutions might be to manage the corridor to for more efficient and climate-friendly transportation. And then the last idea, which is, the other ideas were about, this legislative session ends soon. And with regard to what Egon Terplin talked about in terms of the disconnection of our regional transportation system, the question is whether and when in the Bay Area do we want to see MTC and the region look to a model like a transportation alliance, where we can use the money that we collect regionally and require that integrated fares and schedules and marketing that will grow ridership. Thank you.
Thank you. Since the hour is drawn late, any of the members would like to make a quick comment before we should, adjourn the hearing? Mr. Chu?
I just want to say two things. First of all, thank you to the chair for your leadership and to kicking off this conversation with this select committee, and I suspect that whatever ends up happening as a result of the special session, we have a long-term conversation here in the Bay Area and how to move this forward. And I very much hope that all of the needs that we're talking about, regardless again of where decisions end up in the coming weeks and months, that we are able to tackle all of them, because this is not a problem for 2015. This is a problem for our entire century here in the Bay Area, and we have a chance, I think, to get it right or to be responsible for not getting it right. So thank you for being part of this conversation.
I thank the chair as well, also for including me as a guest on the committee, and reiterate, just in case anybody missed it, there was one mention of ACE. And we have got to be thinking of our connectivity with the Central Valley, because we know that it's growing, and many of the employers here and part of these organizations, their employees work in that area, or they're going to be on our roads as well. So I appreciate that contribution, and thanks again, Mr. Chairman.
I think all that's been said that needs to be said. Thank you all very much for coming.
So we know that through a collaboration of many public entities, private partners, moving forward to a success, this panel will be able to enjoy the commute home and a reason for why this conversation needs to step up and take notice. I do want to say that as I was going home from an event last night, I think it was 8:30 at night, I saw a Genentech bus from Burlingame at the 242-680 moving over to East County. So that's a remarkable, business picking up the slack where moving their employees for their quality of life. So we want to look at all the items that were mentioned today. Again, public transit, the repair of our roadways, and it is our commitment to move forward. I believe there's about a $700 billion need in California for all of the California 58,000 lane miles of traffic that goes on. And as Assemblymember Chu has shared with me, $79 billion in transit needs throughout the state. And again, the dire need of $60 billion right now in the state going forward. We also have the ferry that needs to be, capacity needs to build, BART. We have a lot of needs. And so we need to put our heads together how we're going to collaborate and get all this money. But one of the things is definitely been brought to the forefront that an RM does need to be moved forward to the people so that they can acknowledge and support this for what the good work is this MTC, this body has done. And I do appreciate each and every one of the members that have come and shared with us on the panel your expertise. And I look forward to moving this discussion not in a another meeting, but in a problem-solving way that we can get some stuff done and move forward. So thank you so much for everybody who's held out till 4:30 on a Friday afternoon, and you get to enjoy the traffic, too. Thank you.